As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
You are now listening to the Rocket Ship Podcast, the place where you can learn from successful entrepreneurs every week about strategy, growth, and so much more. None of this would be possible without the help that we get from CodeShip, Envision, and Customer.io. Stay tuned, we have an awesome episode ahead.
Today on the podcast, we talk with Rob Mallory, VP of Talent at Originate. He talks with us about attracting top-notch technical and creative talent. He describes how his company is attempting to disrupt the investment space by investing talent rather than money, and how they've created a process for matching passions and talent with the right companies. Great chat with Rob.
We'd like to take a moment to thank our awesome sponsors. CodeShip makes continuous delivery simple and easy. Go to codeship.com/rocketship to get 20% off 3 months.
We'd also like to thank Envision App. Envision is by far the best prototyping and collaboration tool on the market. Go to envisionapp/rocketship to get the starter plan free for 90 days.
Customer.io is a modern email platform built for startups. Go to customer.io/rocketship to start sending emails
welcome
that convert.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. We're here with Rob Mallory, the VP of Talent at Originate. Rob, welcome.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us, give us kind of the high level of Originate.
So yeah, Originate is a software company, and so we have a unique twist on both the venture world and the consulting world. So we want to bring those together, mm-hmm. and we actually invest engineering instead of cash into startups and work with entrepreneurs and partners and build out portfolio companies.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So how many engineers do you have working here today?
Yeah, so the company as a whole is almost, it's right around 140 people. Okay. And these are, it's a founding type engineers, the guys you're going to, you know, they'll make a phone call and be at Google or Facebook or Twitter, wherever they want to be, that quality bar. Designers, same thing, product specialist, UX, all the things that build great software. Mm-hmm. And then all the business side, the strategist, the investment committee, things along those lines.
So what are you doing to attract that kind of talent?
That's a good question. That's the million-dollar question.
Okay, okay.
That's the I can talk for 2 months on that, or I can give you the 20-second version. But I mean, yes, that's... What do you do? I mean, there's so many different angles that
okay.
I can take that down.
Well, let's. So we really tend to talk about kind of that early stage.
Yeah.
So, say you want to bring on kind of some early engineering talent. What would be some advice that you've given founders on how to source that talent or mm-hmm. attract that talent?
So the big thing there is engineers want to work on tough problems. They want to work with other smart engineers. So you bring those two together. That's a critical component. You can't just have this simple thing that they could bang out at a hackathon in an afternoon. You have to have something that's tangibly difficult.
Okay.
So that's number one. And it's a little bit, I don't want to say herd mentality, but ultimately, if one awesome engineer is on board, now you can get two, now you can get three.
Okay.
And so ultimately, that's where a lot of the technical companies and startups are built around awesome technical people, because that's how it kind of seeds. When you run into difficulties, when you're more on the business or entrepreneurial side and you don't have that technical know-how that the engineers would have.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it comes into much more of a relationship standpoint. Like, you know, you were the CEO of a last company that you took successful, and now you're going to hire two or three of the engineers that were with you before. You know, so you mm-hmm. kind of have to have a little bit of swagger to your business. You can't just be a person with an idea and then just hope somebody's going to build it out for you. You can hope somebody can build you out, but they're probably not going
right.
to leave Google to do it, is what I'm saying.
Right.
So are most of these engineers strictly on the technical side, or are they kind of at that level of being a technical co-founder, CTO, that's going to be kind of on that partner level of these early companies?
You would want them ideally on the partner level. Now, what you run into problems there is that a lot of times when people are partner level, then they can't get back down and dirty into the code. And so you run this, okay, I hire a CTO or a partner. They might have been awesome, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, but they've since moved on to be a VP or CTO of a different company. And then they need to almost rebuild a team in order for them to build whatever you're building. So you really want to, the ideal person to start a company with is that person that's still a rock star, like digging in the nuts and bolts of the code, but either has done that leadership portion or can do that leadership portion. And those are those ones. I mean, those are hard to find.
Yeah. So what other qualities are you looking for beyond like the technical abilities when you're looking at finding a good co-founder or a good technical partner?
The biggest thing is somebody that can do it all. And I know that sounds mm-hmm. kind of silly, but essentially you're looking for somebody that doesn't really have any holes in their game. And it's somebody that you can build an entire, you know, whether it's a 5-person team or eventually maybe a 30-person team. And if they do have holes, then at some point you're going to have to fill those holes.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least they can get to a point where they're competent at enough that you can scale it to a point where then you fill it with somebody that's more specialized.
Okay.
So it really does depend on the person that you're founding it with. And then what do they, what do they bring to the table?
So when you're having these early conversations with a potential engineering hire, what are some of the questions or angles that you're looking for that kind of, you know, set off a good or bad flag?
It's as simple as One of my favorite books on hiring engineers is a book by a guy named Joel Spolsky. Okay. And he has an elite-level software firm, and the book is called Smart and Gets Things Done. So those are two really, really critical things. Okay. We want smart people, and they actually get stuff done. They don't talk about it. They get in there, and they really go after it. And so engineers... you can be smart but then lazy, or you can be, you know, get stuff done but your code is crap. It just depends, and you want that really good mix of both, and then that kind of proactive, entrepreneurialness that comes along with being a founder. Because not you can't walk into a. It's just like building a company. Mm-hmm. If you, just because you worked at an awesome company like one of the big, the big ones that everybody wants to go to work for, now go build a startup, and they don't really realize what they had at the old company. They had all of the process, all the paperwork. They had a printer to actually print the paperwork. Right. And all of that stuff needs to be created from scratch when you do a startup. And so you have to have somebody that knows how to build from nothing, which is fundamentally different and way harder than building, basically editing things or building features onto things.
Right.
I think it's the standard, entepreneur's problem.
Yeah. So are there any angles that you take in kind of, an interview? Like, you've got 30 minutes with somebody. Are there any questions that you typically ask that could find out what type of personality they are?
The big thing that my interview style is super conversational. So I really want to figure out the person that we're in. And my job here at Originate is matching passions.
Okay.
And so the real end that I want to figure out, I was asked this the other day. I really don't have set questions that I ask people. There's no silver bullet to this. It's more about a one-on-one. Who is this person at their core? And right. How do you figure out a person at their core? Yeah, you have to have them open up. And so ultimately, if you can get somebody to open up about, what they would want to do. So I think that's probably my most, is it a crazy question? No, but it's like, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. Now, answer it truthfully. Now we're really starting to get down to it. If you give him, if somebody gives me the answer that they think I'm looking for, or something that doesn't quite get to the essence of who they are and what they actually want to be doing. So really, I'll ask it four or five different ways sometimes. And you really want to get down to, okay, if you weren't being paid tomorrow, what would you do? Mm. If you could do anything in the world, what would you do? And that's when you want those eyes to sparkle up. And then that's when the passion starts, the truth starts coming out. Yeah. And once you can match passions with an individual, what they would be doing, and then passions and mission of a company.
Yeah.
Those two things come together, you've got gold.
Yeah.
And that's what startups are really good at. But most corporations, they're like, are you going to fit into my box? And, right. And if you don't fit in my box, then how do I make you fit in my box? And that's where you run into problems, because then you have to actually motivate people as opposed to them being self-motivated.
Interesting. So I'm almost hearing like you don't pitch your idea first.
No.
It's not about you.
Oh, it's absolutely nothing to do with it. I mean, the engineers and the designers and everybody that we're talking about here, when you're a founding quality person, you can do anything you want.
Yeah.
So it has nothing to do with us. It's more like, what do you want to do? Does that match? But the really nice part about Originate, and I feel super lucky to be part of building the team here, which is, we don't build a team like other companies. We build a team to leverage everybody's entrepreneurialness and their just kind of their general passions and awesomeness, really. And when you can tie those together with tons of different projects that we're doing, and they get, they have the ability to be working on their own side projects and part owners in the ventures that we are taking, mm-hmm. that starts to, it's either go take a job at a startup as a founder and have that same passion, or come do it with us, but do it like over and over and over again.
Okay.
Yeah. So you guys get involved in the early stage. You take some amount of equity and you help build an awesome team for this. What do the later stages look like? Do you guys stay on board after the first versions are out?
It's a great question. It's really the question that we probably get asked, most often in the VC world. Because, again, we're trying to disrupt both the like the venture and the investor world, as well as that more consultative model, which is, you know, consultants come in, they do a project, but they never stay on. Okay. A VC or an investor, they're going to invest cash. Okay. They're still involved heavily, but you better execute. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of combining the execution with the investment. And so, you know, to answer your question, those look different depending on the partnership and the portfolio company that we're working with. But at the end of the day, because we're invested, we want to figure out how best to transition. You know, do we have, you know, maybe a couple of the people that worked on the team, they actually do want to go and like, I'm all in on this startup.
Okay.
Or maybe we help them recruit a team that's more of the, I don't want to call it maintenance team, but the one that's like more of the feature team, or the integrating with new beta customer team, or the, you know, it's maybe a different quality of engineer. Mm-hmm. And more like, you know, kind of the 9-to-5 guy that's going to come in and just, you know, do what they need to do. And so depending on where they're at as far as the technology goes, that's something that we facilitate or help facilitate and or play a, you know, a huge role in actually, you know, just maintain that relationship going forward. So it's but yeah, to your point, it's something that a lot of investors worry about, because If there's no team to acquire, then what am I acquiring?
What am I selling?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So no, it's definitely a good question, and it's something that, you know, we know is a little bit of a tricky thing, mm-hmm. but we want to make sure that you know, we do that handoff properly, or just stay on board.
So you've talked a little bit about the recruiting side of things for the engineers and designers and everything, but what does the other side look like in terms of the companies that you work with? How are you finding them? Are there certain common qualities in the type or size or scale that they're trying to reach?
Do they come pitch you?
Yeah, no, we hear a couple hundred pitches every month, and we run that very similar to any investor company or any, you know, VC, angel group, anything like that. I mean, we have the added twist that we typically don't invest cash. And so from that standpoint, there has to be a technical hurdle to solve. Mm-hmm. So we don't really talk about domain, or it doesn't have to be, you know, social. It doesn't have to be, you know, gaming. It doesn't have to be healthcare. It's really wherever there is a software technical barrier. Okay. And whenever we can bring value from the software and the product development, that's where things start getting interesting, and then we'll move it forward. But we hear a lot of pitches that it's more of a business problem than a technical problem, and we unfortunately are not going to be your best value in that. I mean, we're going to be you can outsource that, and it's no problem.
I see.
Do you only invest talent in companies that have raised capital?
No, we've done that's where we typically. We want to make sure that we're de-risking the technology, but not as much that we're de-risking the just the pure business of it. So we really do want to have partners that that come in having built something, whether it's, you know, or raised money. You know, so it's if an investor thinks enough of a CEO or a team to actually invest money when there's nothing there, mm-hmm. then yeah, that's probably something we'd be super interested in. But at the same time, we're typically looking at there might be a prototype. Maybe that prototype got traction. It now needs to scale. Scaling is a big different beast than building, you know, kind of a flimsy mobile app.
Yeah.
So, you know, all the deals look differently, but, you know, we have certainly done just napkin idea. Nothing exists, no funding exists, but we at least know the CEO and maybe one or two of their team, they're not going to be worrying about paying rent in 6 months. So, you know, they have to have had previous success, and we know we just want to hitch our wagon and mm-hmm. de-risk the technology, and then they go out and raise funds. So we've done a couple of those to where we build for, you know, 6 months, a year, and then they go out and actually raise funds and then go from there.
Yeah. What do you do when that 3 months hits and you can see that, you know, some of the creative talent, I think we've all hit this when we're in the dirt, and when that kind of initial motivation starts to fade. What do you do?
You mean for the creative,
for the developer, the designer?
It's a great question, because at the end of the day, that's kind of what Originate was built around.
Okay.
You know, it's built around that 3 to 6 month cycle, which is, that's the new stuff. You're building out the platform. Mm-hmm. What happens when, and so that's actually one of the ways that we're able to attract who we attract, is they've got almost two options. They can go to the Googles and the Facebooks and the LinkedIns and Twitters of the world, or they can go all in on either a founder or build their own company. Mm-hmm. They're two very different things. We give them kind of the hedged version of both, okay, which is the stability and the longevity of the bigger companies, but with the entrepreneurialness of the startup. Mm-hmm. And then they get to keep doing that 3 to 6 month cycle. But at a startup, when you're all in, you essentially are, let's say, 3 to 6 months of hardcore product development. And now it's time to watch the CEO go to try to sell it and try to invest. And so you're in this mode of, well, I guess I could add this feature. And it doesn't really, that in that phase might last 18 months.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really, it's not interesting. It's not super, you know, tough. It's more, it's out of your hands a little bit. And so we give engineers and designers and product people the ability to kind of keep doing that 6 month thing.
Okay. Okay. And then do you have people that maintain during that, like, hey, a bug request?
Absolutely.
Comes in.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we would never, I mean, everybody, it's kind of a shared thing. It's just like at a startup, you know, some, you don't maybe have that one, you know, gopher that goes around and does the, you know, everybody is high quality. So the CTO might be finding bugs at a startup. You know what I mean? So it's not like you're not part of the maintenance crew, but you are part of the, you know, make sure everything's clean crew.
Yeah.
So something that we've struggled with Hookfeed is hiring contract part-time developers. I know there's, you know, plenty of places where you can find them, but something that's unclear is, after you find one, what does the hiring process look like? Are you doing code pairing? What questions should you be asking? Could you answer two things? Where do you find these people that are both developers and also have partner level skills, or have run the business or other developers before? And two, what does the hiring process look like once you find them?
Yeah. So where you find founder quality engineers is literally anywhere. It's funny, I just wrote a blog post on this, and this is a question I get asked all the time. Our CFO he teaches entrepreneurship over at Anderson at UCLA. And so, you know, he's got tons of MBA students like, well, how do I get my partner? Where do I go? What do I do? And the fact of the matter is it's not hard finding people. And this was what my blog post was, you know, just go to LinkedIn, you know, and type in Google, and then punch in subsearch Stanford, MIT. Okay, you just found an awesome person. Finding them is super easy. How do you now give them, how do you hire them? And that's the trick. And so, you know, kind of narrowing it on how do you hire them is, you've got to give them, again, kind of that what we talked about before, which is there a problem that they want to work on? Mm-hmm. Okay. Is this just because it might be technically unfeasible for, for a founder or for, like, you know, for a non-technical founder to deal with, doesn't mean it's interesting. Building a website or building an app might not be super interesting. And so you end up needing to kind of focus on, what's the quality bar that you're looking for? Maybe the quality bar to get something out the door at the beginning, to just earn, you know, to get some kind of traction. Maybe it is just, you know, go out to your local Ruby meetup and find somebody that's got some spare time that can throw, you know, some, you know, sling some code at it, and boom, now you've got something. You know, pay them, you know, 60, 70 bucks an hour, and that person's ready to go. Is that person going to be, you know, is Google knocking down the door to hire him? Is Originate going to, you know, knock down the door to hire him? I don't know. But he's maybe, he or she is good enough to get that first thing out there. So, you know, so that's, so meeting people, getting out there, find out where developers are going. I mean, Meetup is great. The quality bar on Meetup groups is hit or miss. There's certainly finding, and there's ton. I mean, you can go to AngelList is actually the first. That's the place that I tell people if you haven't built a site or a page on AngelList yet, there's tons of entrepreneurial minded engineers, designers, product people on there. And that's actually worked really well. So as far as like density of the type of people that you're talking about, that's a really good platform. You know, Dice and some of the other, Monster and Hot Jobs and all the others, less so. That's more of the career minded. I want to go to work at, you know, Wells Fargo or Hewlett Packard or something and not be super like entrepreneurial. You're going to get a lot of those type of resumes through something like that. But it really boils down to just relationships. Go out, find out where people are and congregate with them. But don't be that guy. It's like, hey, can I come to your meeting? And then I just need somebody to build my thing. You know, it really does come down to more of a human relationship, and don't treat engineers like a necessary evil that you have to go out and try to herd back into your cool idea. It's the kiss of death when you're trying to recruit.
It sounds like sales. I mean,
isn't everything?
Yes. That's I'm like, you research, you reach out,
yep.
you have to have an angle and something that's interesting to the person.
Oh yeah.
And then maybe you can get to the point where you can sit down and have a conversation and try to see if it's a good fit.
There's no silver bullet. It really, it takes time. It takes effort. It takes a compelling, it can't be all about you. It has to be almost all about them. And so if you make whatever you're pitching all about them and engage whoever you feel like that audience that you're looking for, you're going to get returns. You're going to close deals. That's really what it comes down to.
So it sounds like you're almost building up binders of engineers over time, trying to find out what they like to work on. And then you're also on the other side, building up binders of projects that hopefully when you come across a specific project, you'll have the perfect match that you've already spoken with.
Yeah.
To pair up with it.
And you know, it's so, I mean, there's tons, casting a wide net is important when you're out there, but you know, previous companies, relationships, network. I mean, you really do have to network, and you have to have, if you don't have an engineer that would want to come on board in your network, you might want to rethink building a technical company. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that, I think that would be the, I know it's tough out there. Trust me. I do it every day. And I've got the ultimate thing to sell. Mm-hmm. It's completely and utterly unique. So I know how difficult it is to start from scratch, but if you can't get the first person to buy in, it really, really is tough.
When do you know when to hire someone? Like, especially if you're doing something like Matt, where you're working with a contractor and you might work with them for a couple months. Is there like a moment when you know, like, I should bring this person on full time, or maybe I should just keep this at a distance?
I think it's a great question. It probably comes down to when do you have the money to do it?
Okay.
And then are they, not only are they committed, but do you know that they're your person? And I think that's a really, really tough, a tough problem when people aren't technical. Because, you know, Matt, you had mentioned, you know, what kind of questions do I ask them? Again, you don't, if you're not technical, you don't know. There's nothing, like, it took me 15 years of I've looked at hundreds of thousands of resumes and done probably on the order of 10 to 15,000 interviews with only software engineers. So I have a little bit better gut about just kind of who's going to be good, who's not, and everything like that. But man, if you've maybe done 50 technical interviews and you're not technical yourself, it all looks the same. It's really then a good communicator can fool you into thinking they're a good software engineer. And that is not always the case.
Right. I know that.
There's a story there. It sounds like...
I'm not going to tell it now. All right, cool. So, well, Rob, thank you so much for coming on. Where can we keep up with you and Originate?
So it's originate.com.
Cool. And what's the Twitter handle?
Originate Labs.
All right. And are you on Twitter?
I am barely on Twitter.
Barely on Twitter. Barely. Okay.
I think I've got 12 followers or something. I'm not famous enough to even care what's going on Twitter. I don't have that voice yet.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Yourself a favor, start before you tear yourself apart. Recent events make this heart unwind. This is not a romance. What's the hurry? Don't you see?